up to Perek Aleph and Pirkei Avos, Mishnah Hey, and that is what we're going to study today. But by way of introduction to today's Mishnah, let us first look at the powerful words of the Chafetz Chaim. And these words of the Chafetz Chaim can be found in his commentary on Pirkei Avos on this very Mishnah. So he says the following, Re'ei kama hifligu chazal. Look how much the Chazal emphasized Godel kukulo shalaish hamoneya atzmo migimilas chasadim. Look how negatively they viewed a person, and they thought he was such a detestable human being when this person does not understand or appreciate the value of chesed and how central it is to be a Jew. So much so, writes the Chafetz Chaim, at she'abru mebendrish koheles, he quotes a medrish that says something surprising. Shekol hakofer begemilas chasadim, if someone does not engage in acts of gemilas chasadim, ki'ilu kofer be'ikar rachmana litzlan. Now ask the Chafetz Chaim, how can that be? If somebody doesn't keep Shabbos, we understand why you're considered to be somebody who denies the existence of God. There are certain mitzvahs that we would understand, but ask the Chafetz Chaim, if I don't engage in Gemilas Chasadim, if Achnasas Arachim is just not my thing, it's Ki'ilu Kofer Be'ikar, it's as if I don't appreciate what God Himself is about, how is that to be understood? Explains the Chafetz Chaim, Lefi, Shehashem Yizbarachu Mekar HaTova HaChesed, because God Himself is the source and the foundation of all kindness in the world. Why did God create all of us? Did He need us? Really? Did He need, it's hard to say, did He need this headache? Because it's not a headache for Him, but really, does He need all of this? And the answer is, as the Chafetz Chaim writes, but so many other Sifrei Machshava write the same idea, this was just Kidei Sheyizku HaBeruim. It was just that we should be able to have a rich and meaningful life. And not only that, Yuchal lebesof lehetev ulehischased imahem. It was also that God should be able to further bestow His kindness upon His creation. Va'alzeh hayakol nesinas haTorah v'tzivuya, he writes, this was the objective, this was the mandate of the entirety of Torah that God gave us as well. Kimo dechsiv, as the Pasuk says in Sefer Devarim, Vayitzaveinu Hashem la'asos haskala chukim ha'ela. Why has God instructed us to observe all of His mitzvos? Litov lanu kol hayamim. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if you want to boil down the entirety of Torah, if you want to know why we're all here and why God has created this complicated world, it is simply because litov lanu kol hayamim. It is for us, in order that He should be able to provide us with a rich and meaningful life, in order that He should be able to do His kindnesses to us. V'zeh shekofer b'chol inyano shel midas hachesed. If somebody denies the importance of what chesed is all about, v'omer, and he says to himself, ma liyu l'chesed, chesed is just not my thing, what do I need to be involved in this? Another headache in my life, I have to worry about others and be engaged in the acts of kindness. Chashveyu ki'ilu kofer b'ikar chas v'shalom, writes the Chafetz Chaim, the Medrash is to be taken literally. It means you do not appreciate, you do not understand what God Himself is about. Because the essence of God Himself is just l'hischased imbruav. It's just that God should be able to have a venue to do kindnesses for this cosmos, for this earth, for this world that He created. And therefore, if we, as human beings, do not appreciate the value of what chesed means to a community, it is basically saying, writes the Chafetz Chaim, that we don't really value and understand what God's essence is either. In fact, Chazal tell us an important line in Masechet Sukkah. I didn't put it on here, but the Gemara says something surprising. And there we're told, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Ein staka mishtalemes ela lefi hachesed sheba. How do I figure out the measure of how much reward I will get for giving tzedakah? So there are some people who are blessed with money. There are some people who are blessed with money, and obviously they need to understand that you are almost what we refer to as a gizbar shel hekdish. You are somebody who has been entrusted with an estate, and God expects you to use that money properly. So much so, I'm going to speak about it tomorrow in the city, I'm giving a shiur about tzedakah, and I think this is a very important point that people don't think about. There's a Gemara that perhaps people might not know, that's why they don't think about it, but the Gemara says, the story of Anshei Anassos. Anybody ever heard of the story of Anshei Anassos? So it's an important story to be aware of. The Gemara tells us that one of the Nevi'im, I think it was either Yirmiyah or Yecheskel, I haven't looked it up recently, I'll look it up tonight before tomorrow, but the Gemara says that I think it was Yirmiyah HaNavi had some issue with these Anshei Anassos, and they were trying to destroy his life, and they were going after him, and he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he prayed to God that these community of rich people who are so horrible and look what they're doing to me, I want that you, God, should punish them. Not only did he ask that God should punish them, he actually stated what he wants the punishment to be for them. And what was that? He said, I hope that the money that they have that they give away to charity will be allocated to the wrong places. I hope that the money that they have to give away will be given to causes that are not reputable causes, that are really not worthy causes. And then, says Yirmiyahu HaNavi, they will be punished double. They'll be punished, number one, because they didn't give charity. They'll be punished, number two, because God gave you money and you didn't spend it wisely. Yirmiyahu HaNavi says that, and that's what we refer to in Halacha as the story of Anshei Anasus. And I think about it all the time. It's a question people ask here. We have, I don't know how many women in the room come to shul here on a regular basis during the week, but basically we have collectors in the lobby all the time. And this is a major issue. What do we do? On the one hand, how can I just walk away from somebody who's sticking their hand out? How can I not be sensitive and caring? But on the other hand, how do I know that they're legitimate? How do I know that I'm supposed to be giving the money to this cause? And in fact, if I give my tzedakah money that I allocated for charity and I end up giving it to the wrong cause, it says that I'm going to be punished for doing so. It's almost as if I'm a partner in a business and they ask me to help invest a part of the company with some other businesses and I don't do my homework and I just invest all of this portion that I was responsible for, I invested with people that are just not reliable, not trustworthy, and nothing comes of it, and we lose as a result. Do you not think that the rest of the company will be upset with me? So God expects the very same. If I gave you money, and you are entrusted with that money to do the responsible thing with it, then you need to do your research. My father always says that he sees there are certain ashirim, there are certain people who are blessed with money and who are also blessed with the great siyata d'shmaya of giving it to worthy causes. Not everybody has that blessing. And it's an incredible gift that some people are given, and not everybody is able to say that about the money that they give away. We have to do our research. And the Gemara here, will take a question in a minute, but the Gemara here says, forgetting about the responsibility that you have to give tzedakah and how you need to research whatever it is that you're giving your money to, the Gemara says that the way to measure how much schar I'm going to get for charity is not simply how much of a check I gave, but rather, mishtalemes lefi chesed sheba. How much kindness was involved in my act of charity? So when I went to the person who was collecting in the hallway and I just threw a dollar in his face and I walked away, why couldn't you also offer him a coffee? If somebody's making a kiddush next door, invite him in. What's the problem? When people come to your home, I'm not saying we should have them walking around the whole house, but would it be so terrible if we offer them a drink? Are they legitimate? Are they not? I have no idea, but why would it hurt you if you offered them and you just treated them like human beings? Says the Gemara, Ein hatztaka mishtalemes ela lafi hachesed sheba. The way to measure how much reward we will get for giving charity is really based on the amount of chesed that is involved in the act of charity itself. Yes?
So you actually just said, are they legitimate or not? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you know, like these people come and knock on the door and they put a piece of paper,
right?
You know, like they're there and they're asking, so therefore give it to them. But on the other hand, do I want to support?
It's a very good question. It's a very good question. And I'll just tell you, I am not in the business of researching charity causes. It can take up your whole life. I know that Rabbi Billet's feeling is that we should not be giving to all the people in the hallways because some of them are not even Jewish. Some of them we don't know anything about. And he says unless they have somebody in the community who actually vetted them and looked into it, and they have a piece of paper from members of our community that we trust, he says we should not be giving. It's not because he's mean. It's because he's sensitive to the tzedakah accounts that we have and that we're supposed to be giving to proper places. Why would you give it to a place that you don't even know anything about?
And what are the people who knock on your door that were drinking?
Again, I think there's a difference. You know, people ask me these kinds of tzedakah questions all the time. I think, you know, we waste $5 on far worse things in our lives. You know, the coffee that we buy in the morning in Toddy's is much worse. But, if you're going to give something substantive, if you're going to give something substantial, I think we need to do our homework. I think we need to be careful. And that's exactly what the Gemara says. We need to think about it. But on top of that, the Gemara here tells us that the way to know how much schar you're going to get and deserve for the tzedakah that you give is not based on how much money you give, but it's rather lefi hachesed sheba. Now, in Sefer Shoftim, yeah. Yeah. It's a good question. Am I responsible for publicly humiliating a person who stands in the hallway and stretches out their hand and I just walk right by them? Very good question. I'll tell you just a little private anecdote. I leave my wallet and my phone in the car every day. Just being honest. Anyone who wants to steal it, it's there. But I leave my wallet and my phone in the car every day. This way I can honestly say I don't have a wallet. I don't have to lie to them. I'm very kind to all of them. But I'm not trying to outsmart the system. I don't know what to do. I'm very conflicted. On the one hand, I've been told that a number of the people who hang around in our hallway are not even Jewish. How am I supposed to know? Do I look into this? I'm not saying we shouldn't be kind to the Gentiles also. I think we should be. The Gemara says we need to give charity to them as well. But at the same time, I'm not a wealthy person and I don't give away so much money to tzedakah. So the amount that I do give away, I hope will go to worthy causes. I hope it will go to places that really deserve for that money to be spent. And Sefer Shoftim, we have in Perek Yud Ches, the unfortunate story of Pesel Micha. So Pesel Micha is a very strange story. Let me just give a brief synopsis of what the story is. But basically what happened was there was a woman who had a son by the name of Michayahu. Not Micha, his name was Michayahu. And what happened to him was, one fine day he goes into his mother's safe deposit box and he steals 1,100 shkalim, which was considered to be a nice amount of money. His mother comes home and sees that the money is gone, and she lets out a curse, and she says, whoever stole the money, X, Y, and Z should happen to them. Terrible things. Not realizing that it was her own son. Why would she think that it was her own son? Well, he gets word that his mother, you know, publicized this horrible curse against whoever it is that stole the money. He realizes, I got to do something about this, so he goes to his mother, and he admits to the fact that he stole the money, he confesses to his wrongdoing, and he gives her the money back, and she says, you know, my beautiful child, I forgive you, it's okay, but let's at least use the money for a good purpose. Let's take the money now and build our own Beis HaMikdash in the house here. What do you think? Well, that's what happens. This happened to be at the time when Mishkan Shiloh was available, and everybody was going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan, which was in Shiloh, and now Micha goes ahead and builds a Pesel. He builds what we refer to as in Avodah Zarah. And he then pays a Kohen who happened to be passing through the neighborhood. He commissions a Kohen to come and serve as the Kohen in his house and to serve all of the Karbanos to this Avodah Zarah. That's what's going on. And this lingered for a pretty long period of time, this following of Pesel Micha. And there were many who came and used to be involved in this terrible tragedy of the Pesel Micha story. Says the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin. You know, we're all familiar with the first part of the Mishnah, but most of us have never read the second part. Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. The Gemara in the last parak in Sanhedrin is referred to as parak chelek because it starts off with that line. Every Jew has a place in the world to come. What we don't know is, except. Right? The end of the Mishnah is, except for all these people that are listed there. Now the Mishnah goes on a whole list of people who do not deserve a portion for the world to come for all the terrible things that they did. Ask the Gemara as follows. Let's look at this Gemara together, number bays. Mipnei ma, why is it that the Mishnah is lo manu es micha? Why does the Mishnah not say that one of the members of the Jewish community who is not deserving of a portion in the world to come is micha? After all, look what he did. He served Avodah Zarah and he convinced others to do the same. Does it get worse than that? Isn't he somebody who we should include in this list of people who perhaps do not have a right to the world to come? Says the Gemara, I'll explain to you, and it's a very surprising statement, but let's read it. Mipnei. It's a very simple reason why he does deserve a place in the world to come, although he spent his life being engaged in serving Avodah Zarah and convincing others to do the same. Mipnei, shepito mitsuya la'ovrei derachim. Shocking. Micha, as horrible as he was a hospitable, a welcoming person. He was a person who was thoughtful, and he was gracious to those who were over Edrachim, who passed through his neighborhood. And therefore, says the Gemara, you can do the horrible things, don't take this as an excuse, but the Gemara says you can be a person as horrible as Micha, who creates this whole culture of Avodah Zarah, and yet you deserve a portion in the world to come because pito mitsuya la'ovrei drachim. Because his chesed was just overwhelming. because his perspective on the way he treated others was something that he was known for. And therefore, he's deserving of a reward. Not only that, the Gemara then goes further. Tanya Rab Nasan Omer, Migrav L'Shilo Gimel Milen, from the place where he was to Mishkan Shilo was quite a distance. V'haya Ashan Hamaracha, the Ashan Pesel Micha Misarvin Zebazeh. And they had the smoke that was rising from all the karbanos that were being offered in Shilo, joined up somewhere in heaven together with the smoke that was coming up from this terrible altar that was resurrected for the Avodah Zarah. Well, Bikshu Malachi Asher is the Dachvo. The Malachim come to God and they say, get rid of this guy, look what he's doing. He has an altar, he has an Avodah Zarah, he's creating this terrible culture around himself, and many Jews are falling for it. How do we keep him alive? Amar Lan HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, no. He nichulo. I got this one. Leave him alone. Why? Shepito Mitsuyila Ovrei Durachim. Fascinating statement. But that's what the Gemara tells us. That his chesed was so overwhelming, and as a result of the way he treated others, as a result of his perspective on Hachnasas Orchim and on Gemilas Chasadim, as a result of that, the Ribono Shel Olam advocated for him against the Malachi Asharis. Once again, you see how central it is, this idea of chesed and Gemilas Chasadim in general, how much we need to focus on it. So we have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It's both in Chosha Mishpat as well as in Yaradeya. If I decide that I want to live in a community, say I want to live in Woodmere, okay? So I don't know anybody here. I happen to move into the neighborhood. I am a single person who does not plan to get married, and I just want to find a nice place to live, so I move into this neighborhood. I'm 60 years old, and I'm having a nice life. And we're just building up this community in Woodmere. So what does a community need in order to be a functioning community? Everybody would agree that we need a mikvah, we need a school, we need a shul, we need, I don't know, a couple of things that everybody would agree are necessities for a functioning Jewish community. Do we need 10 shuls? Okay, it's complicated. But we certainly need a shul, and we certainly need a school, and we need certain things that every Jewish community needs to have. Well, Shulchan Aruch writes, every member of the community must help pay for those expenses. I don't have a right to say, well, I'm a 60-year-old single guy, I'm never going to use the mikvah, I'm not getting married, it's just not relevant to me, and therefore I'm not contributing. No, I don't have a right to say that, because even if it's something that I personally might not need, it's something that our community has decided is important for us, and therefore it is something that I must pay for as well. So much so that the Shulchan Aruch writes, you can force that person to pay and contribute his share to the communal need for whatever it might be. I mentioned this last year when we had a Yachad Shabbaton, and I'm always very moved when we have the Yachad Shabbaton every year. It's coming up in March. And what I mentioned Shabbos morning when I introduced the speaker from Yachad, one of the kids, I always love when they speak in our minyanim. But one of the things that I mentioned, I think, is a point worth mentioning here as well. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who was the greatest of the greats of our generation, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in the Halicha Shlomo that the same way that we have an obligation to contribute to the building of a shul, even if I happen to be a person who likes to daven at home, or I have to pay for the mikveh, even if I'm a person who is never going to use the mikveh, or I have to pay for the school, even though I don't have children who go to the school, because these are communal norms, these are communal expectations that we all need to help contribute toward, so too writes Reb Shlomo Zalman. It goes without saying that every community needs to have an institution for special needs children. And nobody has a right to say, well, my children don't need those services, and therefore I will not contribute. So it's definitely a chiddush that Rav Shlomo Zalman has, but living in our generation, we understand how true that is. So nobody has a right to say, well, these services are not relevant to me, and therefore, let them go to someone else to build that school. Let them find another place where they can raise the money in order to build whatever program they need to build. No. As a functioning Jewish community, writes Rav Shlomo Zalman, we need to make sure that those children have the maximum education that they can have and the services that they can be provided with. And we, the entire community, must share in that obligation. I think it's just a point that is worth mentioning. Here writes the Shulchan Aruch as follows. Number Gimel. Kofim b'nei ha'ir ze'ezeh. We can have one member of the community force another. Meaning if we as a community decided, we have a committee, a community council, and we have decided that this is something that everybody should contribute toward. We have a right to force one another to help pay for it. So I was telling my children this the other night, that, you know, I saw an interesting halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So my son said to me, what does it mean to force somebody? It's a good question. It's a kid growing up in this generation. How do you force anybody to do anything? It's a good question. What, are we going to arrest the person? On what grounds? What have I done wrong? So I didn't pay? You can. So forcing actually means that we can say, if you don't understand the value of our community council's decision that you have to pay for X, Y, or Z, then you don't have a right to use any of our community services. So you're not welcome in the shul, and you're not welcome in our school, and you're not welcome to share in any of the other services that our community shares in, because all of this is based on one understanding. Now, we're not talking about a community where it's corrupt and we have people who are just making arbitrary laws and just sending out assessments for things that are unnecessary. No, we're talking about a situation where these are real necessities and someone decides, well, the mikveh is not for me and therefore I'm not going to contribute. Well, if you think that the mikveh is not something that's important for you, then the shul is not important to you either and you don't have a right to use it. So kofen means we do have a right to strong-arm the person and make them pay in other ways. Make them understand the severity of their decision. Be it as it may, what is in that category of items that we're able to force somebody else to help contribute to it? Says the Shulchan Aruch, lasos choma. It goes without saying that every community needs a police station. Right? A choma. You need to build a wall. Right? Current events. So everybody has to contribute when we decide that we need to have some sort of safety and security around our community, so everybody has to help pay. Why can't I say, what do you mean? I'm a triple black belt, and if anybody comes in, don't worry, I'll take care of them. No, that's not reasonable. Even if you might know how to fend off these people who come into your home, as a community, we have a right to expect that we are going to be safe and secure, and everybody must share in that obligation. And certainly, the Shulchan Aruch goes on and says, "Livnos nehem beis haknesses." You're allowed to force others to build a shul. "Viliknos sefer Torah neviim uksuvim." You have to buy svarim kedei sheyikra behem kol mi sheyirtza min hatzibur. Okay, writes the Rama. "Vehu adin lachol tzarchei ha'ir." This also means any communal need that we as a community think is important. For example, writes the Rama, "Kofim b'nei ha'ir ze ezel lahachnis archim." Imagine. Somebody in the neighborhood says, it's just not my thing. I don't like to have company. Kofin, we have a right to force every member of the community, writes the Rama, the same way we have a right to force you to pay for the shul and to help pay for the mikvah and everything else, we have a right to force you to be involved in hachnasas orachim and gemilas chasa. Powerful. I think it's a powerful statement of the Rama, but it sort of shows us how fundamental this is to every Jewish community. Just like it's axiomatic that every community needs to have a shul and a school and a mikveh and everything else that we mention, so too it goes without saying that every member of a community needs to be involved in acts of chesed and achnasas orchim. And says the Rama, we have a right to demand it of our membership. We have a right to demand it of our community. And it's an expectation that we should all see as being something that is relevant to all of us and that is fair to expect of every member of our community. Fascinating chiddush of the Rama. But with that introduction in mind, let us now read our Mishnah. Number Dalet. Perek Aleph Mishnah Hey, the Mishnah tells us, Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim Omer. Yi beischa pasuach l'ravacha. One's home should be open to the public. It should be welcoming and engaging to others. V'yihu aniyim b'nei beisecha. And one should be comfortable having aniyim come into your home. And you should obviously take care of them when they come to your house. Now, I know some people are going to be uncomfortable with the next line. V'altar b'sicha im ha'isha. Let me explain why I think this line in the Mishnah is more relevant in our generation than perhaps in previous ones. You know, we look around the world, and I think it's no doubt, at least in my mind, that our generation is prutzim ba'arayas. Look how many community leaders have been destroyed, Jewish and non-Jewish alike. Look how many people have been destroyed because of issues of arayas, because they didn't know where to draw the line. You know, Dr. Pelkowitz told me a number of years ago, and I'm not in the field, I don't know, but he told me, of all the cases that he's been involved with where there was sexual impropriety, he said he can't think of one where they actually followed the rules of Chazal with regard to Hilchus Yichud. It's a powerful statement. Chazal weren't so stupid after all. Right? And they set up laws for us. So when Chazal tell us here, you should have an open home, and you should be engaging and inviting to others, remember that with that comes a tremendous challenge. Remember that with that, when we're open with everybody, you have to understand that there can be sometimes a fallout to that. And one has to be very vigilant of it. So very often I get questions about the laws of Yichud. And when it comes to the laws of Yichud, there are many different Haterim that the Shulchan Aruch discusses. And they are definitely Haterim lechatchila, keeping the door open, whatever, if the husband is in the community, all different things that we have in Shulchan Aruch. So somebody called me recently about a whole situation where he was together with a family member, but it wasn't really a family member, and he was nervous about Yichud, and he was trying to figure out how he's going to get around this problem. And I discussed it with my father, and my father told me the same thing that he's told me every time I discuss any other Yichud Shaila with him, and that is, it's true that the Shulchan Aruch gives this heter and that heter and leave the door open, and as long as the husband's in town and whatever it might be. However, the Rambam does say, nothing to do with the laws of Yichud, but the Rambam does say that the Shvil HaZav, the golden path in life, is for a person to find themselves on the Derech HaMemutza. We shouldn't go to the extreme in either direction. Now, everybody has their own definition of what's extreme. But for the most part, the Rambam says, you should try to find a healthy medium. That is the right way to live life. Don't be in the extreme in either direction. However, the Rambam says, where should a person go to the extreme? He says, if you have a generation that is a dar paritz be'inyon echad, if you have a generation where there is something that is so obviously lacking, where people are just not paying attention to it, and it's so easy to fall prey to the issue of that generation, there, says the Rambam, we have an obligation to go to the opposite extreme. And my father tells me this every time I discuss Hilchus Yichud with him. Is it true that there are loopholes, and if someone's in town, and if the door is open, it might be true? But when we're talking about Inyanei Arayos, in our generation, is this a place to cut corners? Have there not been enough politicians and people who are famous who have destroyed their lives over these things? Do you think they ever dreamt that they would come to such levels, that their lives would be destroyed over it? Of course not. But we need to be careful. And says the Mishnah, this is something we need to think about. Why is this troubling? Yes. I feel uncomfortable sharing the details of a therapist who was in my home the other night. Actually, a local therapist who, I'll change the story a little bit, but if I just feel uncomfortable saying the story as it is. But there's a local therapist who was talking to me about somebody who had no love at home for whatever reason. They had a very unusual marriage and met somebody at work and did start off the relationship just by talking in the coffee room at work and eating lunch together at work. And now they're involved in a full-blown relationship that is destroying both families. And both families live in this neighborhood. So, yes, to say that it's a big jump from Sicha to that, yes, it is. But this is the way things start. Let's not fool ourselves, right? Relationships develop over time. And the Mishnah says, don't think it means you're not allowed to talk to someone, you're not allowed to be a mensch. But it does mean that you have to be wary, you have to be careful, and one has to have their guard up, certainly in the generation that we live in today. Now, the Rambam writes something that I think is a novel interpretation of our Mishnah. When the Mishnah says, Yihyu aniyim b'nei be'secha, I think that is simply understood to mean that we should allow those who are downtrodden, we should allow those who are downcast, those who are hopeless, to come into our home and feel comfortable there. However, the Rambam says it means something even more than that. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim, let's look at the Rambam together in number Hey. He says, Tzivu chachamim sheyiyu b'nei beiso shel adam aniyim v'yisomim b'makom ha'avadim. Says the Rambam, you know what it means? It doesn't just mean inviting somebody in for a meal. It doesn't just mean being kind and offering them a cup of coffee. What it means is, says the Rambam, when you need a painter, when you need a gardener, when you need someone to do work in your home, why not think about the person who actually can use the parnasa? Yiyu aniyim b'nei beisech amin, says the Rambam. Why not hire the one who you can actually make a mensch out of them? Show them that you believe in them. So I remember I was once in someone's home, a family member, and I'm overwhelmed by the amount of chesed that this family is involved in. It's really overwhelming in so many different ways. But one of the things that really caught my attention was I went to their home, and we came back from Shacharis, and somebody had pulled up at the house and made a delivery of pastries. And I said, that's interesting. Like, do you get a fresh delivery of pastries every day? They said, yes. And then I saw that at the end of the day, they were still on the counter. So I said, what's this about? He said, well, Nebuch, the guy lost his job. He has nothing to do. So we pay him every day, even though we don't need it. We pay him every day to go to the bakery. And we ask him to go to a bunch of members of our family in the neighborhood, and he drops off pastries every day. If we eat it or we don't, doesn't matter. That's real chesed. And I spent a few days in these people's home, and everything I saw were a bunch of disparate people who really didn't fit into this home, just streaming through the house all day long and doing all these kinds of strange things. You know, somebody came to clean off all the shoes. There was a lot of snow. There was somebody who came that day to clean off all the shoes that were at the front door. And I said, what are you, crazy? You have somebody come to clean up shoes? Yeah, the guy doesn't have a job. Why not? So again, you have to have enough money to afford that. But says the Rambam, that is the highest level of chesed. That you take a person and you make a mensch out of them and you say, I believe in you. There's something that you can contribute to my life in a meaningful way. And yes, says the Rambam, that's what it means. Yiyu aniyim b'nei beisecha. Don't just allow them to come into your home and to participate in the meal or participate in feeling comfortable, but allow them to feel like a real person when they come into your home by hiring them for different aspects of work. The great Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, so he was known for his incredible genius and for being the Rav of Brisk and for being the Rosh Hashiva of Alazhen, and he did so many amazing things in his life, and yet he left in his tzava that there should be no te'arim. What does that mean? No accolades, no descriptions, thank you, on his matzeva. When he passed away, he said, I wanted to say, Chaim ben Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Period. That's what he wanted. His children, the Brisker Rav and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe was the Rav's father, they said, how can we listen to that? We're going to put a matzeva that just says his name? That doesn't make sense. But how can we not listen to his request? So they only wrote one thing. You know what it says? And you can all see this. It's in Europe. It says, Po Nitman, here is buried, something like that. Chaim ben Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Rav HaChesed. What they were most proud of their father for was not his intellectual genius. It was not the yeshivas that he built. It was not the rabbi of the community that he was. It was Rav HaChesed. This is who our father was. And Rav Soloveitchik often used to talk about it, how there's a snippet of Reb Soloveitchik who writes that Reb Lezer Silver loved to describe to me what my grandfather's home was like in Brisk. The acts of chesed of Reb Chaim came to the fore in his residence. Notices were placed by strangers all over the world of his anteroom. They used to come and like reserve their beds as if it was their house. Poor people would take naps on the couch in his room, and Reb Chaim would never wake them or disturb these unfortunate individuals. His children said when he passes away, we're going to write Rav HaChesed. That sums up who Rav Chaim was, more so than anything else, because it's so much the fundamental of what a Jew needs to be about. And that says our Mishnah, Yiyu aniyim b'nei beisecha, allow your home to be a place where you feel, this is not my home. I'm not the balabais. I'm not the one who is in charge of deciding, you know, what the status of all of God's creatures should be, of all of God's creations. Human beings are human beings, and they deserve my respect, they deserve my dignity. Now, having an open home is something that is obviously a beautiful kind of way of life to foster and engender in one's home. But at the same time, there's a tremendous challenge that comes along with it. And we started to speak a little bit about it, but I now want to delve into it a little bit further. I don't know how many of us have heard of the Sridei Esh. Sridei Esh was a survivor of the Warsaw Ghetto. He ultimately had somebody he was close with who paid for him after the war to come to Switzerland. And he survived till 1966. He passed away in 1966. in Switzerland. The Sri Deish was a Gaon HaGaonim. He was an absolute genius. He was the Rosh Hashiva of the Hildesheimer Seminary in Germany. And the Sri Deish wrote some groundbreaking tshuvas, referred to as the Sri Deish. But what he also has, which is far less well known, my father as a child gave this to me to read, and I'm so grateful because it's a sefer that I never would have come across. But he has a compilation of drushas that he gave there in Switzerland. After the war, he was trying to encourage the young members of the Jewish community who had survived. He was trying to encourage them that they should get married and they should build families and they should stick to the faith. And he has some very, very beautiful and insightful drushas that he then wrote up. And he's very poetic. So here, he has a drusha that he gave to a young couple that was getting married. I don't know if this was said under the chuppah. It seems to me to be way too long to say under the chuppah. But maybe it was said at the Sheva Brachos or at some point when this couple was getting their lives started. This is the drusha that he gave. And what he tries to do here is figure out what are the fundamentals of a Jewish woman's role in creating her home. He's speaking to the Kala, who is a member of his community. And he says, what are the fundamentals based on Chazal? What do we think are the most important ingredients for a Jewish home to be created in the perfect way that it should be? To cultivate the right kind of atmosphere for our homes. So he says the first place that we should look is at the first Jewish home. Let us try and study the home of Sarah Imenu. And I think the interpretation that he gives to a medrash that I've read 100 times is so novel, is so meaningful. So I think it's worth going through the whole thing. I left out many parts of this, but I took the basic pieces of what I thought was the most important thoughts that he shares with us. So let's read it together. V'chima, second paragraph, number vav. V'chima hayativa shal bayis zeh. What was the incredible spirit of this first Jewish woman? What did she create in her home? What kind of atmosphere did Sarah Imenu nourish and cultivate and foster for her husband Avraham Avinu and for her son Yitzchak Avinu as well? So he continues. This was the first Jewish home, as we know. It was tailor-made for the Jewish family. And it was made specifically for the meaningful and rich life that a Jew is supposed to be living. This was a home where, again, he's very poetic, but he says this was a makom shalva penimit where there was supposed to be inner serenity and calm. Koras Ruach Shalema was where people were supposed to feel satisfied and happy. Makam Rucha Ola Hilamala, an elevated spirit. Misro Memes Umit Patechet. Meitav Nishmasava Hadar Hadara Shala Isha Evrit Mislabshim Tzura Muchashit. You were able to feel all that Sarah Imenu invested in creating this beautiful home that she did. Mahayativ Haksamim, he asked. What was the magic that she used? What magical tools did she use in her arsenal to create this perfect Jewish home? Now Rav Weinberg, the Sri Deish, points us to a medrash that Rashi quotes on Chumash. And again, I've read this medrash so many times and it never really meant too much to me. I learned about it in kindergarten. But he gives such rich meaning to it. So the medrash writes, there were three things that were unique about the home of Sarah Imenu. I'm sure many of us are familiar. Number one, there was a ner dolek me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. Medrash tells us there was a candle that lit from one week to the next. Number two, it says there was a bracha metzuya be'isasa. Blessing was always found in her pastries. Okay? And number three, there was anan kashur al ha'ohel, says the Medrash. There was always a cloud that was situated on top of this home of Sarah Imenu. Those are the three facts, so to speak, that the Medrash tells us about the home of Sarah Imenu. There was a Ner Shabbos Dolek, There was a bracha b'isasa, and there was an anan kasher al ha'ohel. Look at how brilliantly Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg breaks down this medrash and takes such rich meaning and significance from each of these 3 points. Number one, what does it mean, ner dolek me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos? Everybody with me? Bottom paragraph? Ner Shabbos. Heichan ha'mishorer asher dai milim b'fiv. Where will you find a poet in the world who has the right words to describe l'ta'er et ha'chein v'ha'chesed ha'shofchim al p'nei ner shel Shabbos? Who can describe the beauty of what Ner Shabbos are all about? Of that scene, of that picture of the woman who's lighting the Shabbos candles. Kama simcha hichnis kvar b'libosem shal Yisrael shekadru, v'kama or le'ineim shechashchu meirov hashibud v'hatila'a. He says, how much difficulty have we endured as a people, and yet we know when it comes Friday night and the woman goes and illuminates the house, it just brings such reassurance. It brings such joy to the whole family. We know that our perspective changes. We're relieved that it's finally Shabbos. And he said, this is the way it's been for thousands of years. Ner shel Shabbos, zivuk shel or ukedusha. Or rach v'na, it is a very subtle light. Utzal kokach kedusha amuka, it is a treasure of so much holiness and sanctity. Kedusha mishtapeches ka'or shemesh b'tzaharayim, it inspires and it illuminates like the sun illuminates our day. Me'adenes, it refreshes us. Mechaya u'miromemes, it elevates us. Davar shenitan rak liyehudi b'leil Shabbos, this is a gift that was given only to the Jew on Leil Shabbos. No way of describing that to somebody else who's never seen it or experienced it on their own. Lihis anegala bebeso. And he writes, Rak Isha Ha'ivrit Yodas Leitzer Osa Rakhi. Only a Jewish woman knows how to create that ambiance. Ki Mekerev Nishmasa Himala Osa. Because when a woman lights those Shabbos candles, we know that it's from the depths of her soul that she does so. Right? So who doesn't have a vision or an image of somebody crying as they light the Shabbos candles at some point in their lives? This is an intimate moment for a woman where she does this mitzvah, where she ushers in the Shabbos from the depths of her neshama, he writes. Uvitzedek mekam leves penei ha-malachim shebarim levarech birchas ha-Shabbos. It makes sense that this is the first thing that the angels bump into, so to speak, when they enter our homes. Le'oro shal ner Shabbos, he writes, when we have the light of the Shabbos candles, efshar be'emes liros malachim. It gives us the ability to experience what it means to be angelic. It almost makes us feel like angels ourselves. Shabbos is just a different experience. Me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. What does it mean that Sarah Imenu's candle was lit from one erev Shabbos to the next? And he explains, Amnam, lo kalisha ivrit yodat, Lehadlik ner shel Shabbos. Not every Jewish woman knows the secret of lighting Shabbos candles. Lo benishmas kalisha ivris tamon umunach nechazeh. Not every woman has this treasure and this gift of lighting the Shabbos candles properly and understanding what it's supposed to do to her family and her home. Mechovasa lelamed es meleches ha'adlaka. Turn to the next side of the page. It is her obligation to learn Meleches ha-hadlaka. What does the lighting of the Shabbos candles actually mean? Ulefateach b'kirba es-ha'or. Mau ha-simenim heitiva lahadlik olo. How do we know whether or not a woman has successfully lit the Shabbos candles? Everybody lights them. Writes the Sri De'esh so brilliantly. Heavy Omer, I would say. If it ends up being an or, that is meir b'meshech kol ha-shavua. The light that the Jewish woman brings into the home is something that needs to linger and continue to encourage and inspire her family for the entire week. That, he writes, is what it means. That Sarah Imenu's candles were lit me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. She understood that my job as the mother of this home is to illuminate my family and to enrich their lives and uplift them. And this is something that cannot be limited to just an erev Shabbos. This is something that is my job to make sure that that feeling and that sensitivity lingers and continues on throughout the entirety of the week. That, he says, is ingredient number one to Sarah Imenu's trick of how to build the perfect Jewish home. When a woman understands that this is her opportunity to inspire and elevate a family the entirety of the week. Number two, he says, Bracha Mitsuya Be'isasa. What does that mean? Every time she baked challah, it came out perfect? It's impossible. What does that mean? Every time she baked a batch of cookies, it was always the right way? It can't be. It's impossible. So what do we mean? He says, B'yamim kashim la'avi mishpacha b'Yisrael. Back in the days, when the breadwinner of the family was only the male member of the family. So what would happen when he had a difficult week? And unfortunately, his business did not go well. And he comes home on Friday and he's unable to provide for his children and his wife that were counting on him. And he's afraid and he's embarrassed and he's distressed. What's going to be? How am I going to take care of them? Wasn't this my responsibility? I am the father of these children. I am the husband of this wife. Writes Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, when you have days like those, when he is unable to provide the basic necessities for his children that he has the responsibility to provide, always in times like that, himtika ha'isha ha'ivris ba'ometz liba, the woman has the capacity with her strength to alleviate meriras hamatsuka hagadola. Garesh yigaresh daga v'itzavon. A woman has the ability to be encouraging and optimistic. A woman has the ability to alleviate his feelings of anxiety and his tension and his stress. And what's going to be? And the woman says, there's a bracha nimtza be'isasa. We have so much blessing in our lives. So yes, things are going wrong, and this child might be sick, and you might not have had a good parnasa this week, and a lot of things are making you nervous, but the woman has the ability to identify and to find those places in life where we can appreciate the blessing. The bracha of Sarah Imena was always nimtza be'isasa. Can you imagine how many years were Sarah and Avraham Avinu married until they had a child? A lot of years. Let's say 75 years, something like that. I would imagine Avraham Avinu is running around all week long doing his kiruv, whatever he's involved in. He comes home Friday night, can you imagine? Or he comes home whatever night of the week and he says, you know, Sarah, what's going to be? Can you imagine God's not giving us children? Can you imagine how much we're suffering? Does this make any sense? Can you believe it that I'm the only believer in God in the world? And everybody thinks I'm crazy? He had a difficult life. And I would imagine after 5 years or 10 years, or certainly after 70 years, it gets very depressing and very lonely. And it's not simple to keep living on like that and to keep to your mission of what you believe is the right way to live life when you see no blessing in that life. And Avraham Avinu's wife, Sarah Imenu, had the fortitude, she had the capacity to stand up and say, no, there is always a bracha nimtza be'isasa. There is always blessing that I can identify in our lives, in our house, in our family. There are positive moments of life that we need to learn to focus on. Writes the Sri Deish, that is the second ingredient of a woman building the perfect environment in her home. Number one, ner dolek me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. Number two, bracha mitsuya be'isasa at all times. And number three, he says, anan kashur al ha'ohel. What does that mean? Anan ha'atzilus v'hatzniyus ha'mashmaz ha'yapores al besa. You know, we sometimes read this medrash and we think that it means there was a cloud, a heavenly cloud, that resided over her tent. Writes the Sri Deish, obviously, poetically, but he says, no, that is not what it meant. Anan kashur ala ohel was the following. Hayasochech ala bifnei einei hazarim. Sarah Imenu said, you, Avraham Avinu, want to have an open home, and you want to invite everyone to be a part of our lives? I'm going to put up the safeguard. I'm going to put up the fence and secure our privacy of our own family. I'm going to remind you that yes, there always needs to be that thin layer above our home where we decide what we allow into our home and what we keep out. Anan kashur ala oel was Sarah taking responsibility and understanding this is the only way to live. And this is the only way to have a successful family be nurtured if we learn how to make boundaries, if we learn how to make safeguards for our family's privacy. Writes Rav Weinberg, Ein habayis ha'ivri rashay lios mivtzar sagur misugar. We cannot build a fortress in our home. We have to have an open home like our Mishnah says. However, he says, look at the next paragraph, Ulam, me'idach gisa, as much as it's important to have a house of chesed and to encourage our children to appreciate that kind of life and those decisions that we make as parents or as educators, that we want to invite chesed and we want to engage others in our home. Me'idach gisa, ein chayim mishpacha intimiyim, our private, intimate, and personal life is not rashoi lios mutzagim liroa einem einaim zaris v'sakranios. Our private and intimate lives are not meant to be on display for those curious and intrusive personalities that might be frequenting our homes. Lemishpacha, for a family, he says, beisa zehu beis mikdasha, and mechitza socheches takum. We have an obligation as parents of our home, as the ones who are responsible for nurturing the proper environment. We have to put up boundaries. We need to be the ones to decide what comes in and what's just something that is unreasonable, that doesn't belong. What are the limits? How do we protect our children? How do we restrict ourselves? So especially for those of us who are on Facebook, and I always wonder, is there anyone here who's on Facebook who believes that the couples who share every intimate detail of their lives to the entire world, I honestly do not believe that they have any better shalom bayis than myself and my wife. In fact, I believe they probably have worse. They probably have worse. Why does the world need to know which restaurant you went to for your wife's birthday? Why is that anyone's business? Sari Menu taught us that one of the critical ingredients to having a meaningful relationship, which is something that is so important to us, is to understand that it's meant to be intimate. That there are parts of our lives that we don't open up to the world. That we need to have anan kashur ala ohel. Yes, we need to figure out how to have an open home, but at the same time, how to have the safeguards in place and how to set up boundaries. Al beisa shel Sara, look at the next paragraph. On this home of Sara Imenu, Hayasochachim chush hayeus hativi shela hamafutach. She opened her home, it was beautiful. The afal pisha dal sosea hayapsuchos. Even though, yes, Avraham Avinu invited in the world and he was so welcoming and so thoughtful, and he invited everybody to come and participate in his life, bechozos, with all of that, lo hayabesa pundak lechol over vashav. This was not a train station. Sara Imenu said no. We can be nice and welcoming and a family of chesed, but this is not a train station. Ein bitcha bo af le'ish. I don't trust anybody. Our family is our family. And our primary responsibility is to our children. You know, there were so many reasons when you think about why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu love Avraham Avinu? I can give you 101 reasons why God should love him. He was the first believer in God. He was the first Rosh Yeshiva. It says that he made thousands of Balei Tshuva. Many things. Look at his emunah, look at everything. And what does the Torah say? Why does God love Avraham Avinu? Ki yidativ, it's very clear. I love him. Ki yidativ means I love him. Pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha Vayera. I love Avraham Avinu. You know why? Lemana sher yitzava es beso ves banav acharav leleches b'derech Hashem. Because he focused on his children. Because Avraham Avinu understood that his primary responsibility is to educate his kids. So all the chesed in the world, everything that I'm involved in, it's all very nice. But don't forget about your own children. Sara Imenu was the one responsible for creating that kind of environment in the house. We can have an open home. Everybody's welcome to come in, but we will decide what the boundaries and the limitations of that chesed are. And that, writes Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, is something that we need to think about. When the Mishnah tells us to have open homes, understand that along with that comes a tremendous challenge. Your intimate and private life that is meant to be private and intimate can sometimes suffer from that. And we have an obligation to strike that balance between being open and welcoming to others and at the same time understanding that there need to be boundaries and limitations that are set up around the beautiful home that we create. Let me just close with one final comment. I've heard a number of times Rabbi Asher Weiss speak about issues of chinuch. And there's always a comment that he makes in all of these talks that I've heard, which always resonated with me. So, the Gemara says in Psachim, that when we talk about our description of the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says, Lo kavram avinu shekaro har. The Beis HaMikdash ultimately was not in the image and the vision of what Avram Avinu saw it as. Avram Avinu called it Har HaMoriah. He saw it as a mountain. No, that's not the Beis HaMikdash. Lo ki Yitzchak avinu shekaro sadeh, says the Gemara. It says, Vayitze Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. No, that is not the image, that's not the vision that we have of a Beis HaMikdash either. Ela ki Yaakov Avinu shekaro bayis. Rather, it's like Yaakov Avinu, who called this place a home. As we're told in the Pasuk, Vayikra Shem HaMakom Ahu Beis El. Ein Zeki in Beis Elokim. Yaakov Avinu refers to that place as a bayis. Now, what exactly the Gemara means is a good question. But he extrapolated from here a very important idea with regard to chinuch. He said Avraham Avinu built his home on a har. Avraham Avinu had such an idealistic perspective about life, so ambitious, he was such a visionary. And he wanted his children to live on this unrealistic plateau. Do you know that the Rambam says that Avraham Avinu successfully made alafim urevavos, thousands of people he made balei tshuva? And I ask you, you read all the pages of Chumash, where'd they go? How do we not hear about a single one of them? What happened to them? So he suggested, it's because Avraham Avinu looked at a Jewish home as being a har. We have to have the highest, most idealistic expectations for our children and for those who want to be in contact with what Judaism is all about, and sometimes that's unattainable for most people. It's impractical. We cannot build a home on a har. Lo ki Yitzchak Avinu shekaro sadeh. You cannot have a home where it's just an open playing field, where it's just chaotic. Train station, where everything comes and everything goes and there is no boundary at all. The way to build a proper home is Ki Yaakov Avinu shekaro bayis. Yaakov Avinu, who understood that the way to have the perfect balance is that we build a home where we have walls, but we also have doors and windows where we allow certain things in and we keep certain things out. That is the only way to construct and to nurture the proper environment that our children need in the homes that we create for them. And that is what our Mishnah is teaching us here. Yehi beischa pasuach lervacha. It's amazing! Open up your house and allow others to be comfortable in there. Like the Rambam says, don't just open it to them. Allow them to feel like a mensch in your house. Ein atzdaka mishtalemes ela lefi achesed shabah, like we began with. The amount of reward that you will get is commensurate with the amount of chesed that is involved in whatever it is that you have done. But at the same time, understand that along with that, you need Sara Imenu's key ingredient, which is anan kashur al ha'ohel. Always to have that safeguard. Always to have something that is like a bias, where we have walls, that we know what we belong, what influences, and what kinds of people we want in our home, and which kinds of people we need to stay away from, and not engage with, and not allow into our home. It means physical people, and it means cyberspace also, kind of people. We need to be careful, but that is our job. That is the opportunity that we have as adults to foster and create that perfect environment. And that, says Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg, is the three ingredients that we learn from the great Sari Imenu. So Amir Tzashem.